8:02 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today, we are in Hour 3 of the program. Randeep Jand is going to join us in just a moment here to kick off Hour 3. Good tune, Greg. Hour 3 is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. Yes, Greg?
We're thinking this might have theme song potential. What do you guys think?
I like it.
We could put some words together for it. For who?
For Janda.
Yeah. Randy.
Jason. For Randy. Randy Janda.
Yeah, okay.
Calls the game now. No, it's my
friend. It's only to that nature.
There's not many people that can freestyle a jingle. Andy is one of those people.
I'm texting Blippi as we speak.
Tell the folks about Kid Tech.
He'll be like, stay off my turf.
Yeah. Stay off the west side.
Yeah, you might think this kid song thing is all fun and games, but we take it pretty seriously.
Blippi's kind of a violent person.
Yeah, a lot of drive-bys. Coming to you live from the Kintech studio, Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of 5-star Google reviews. Surfie, what are you waiting for?
Kintech. So you normally hear our next guest calling games alongside Brandon Batchelor right here on Sportsnet 650, but tonight Randeep Janda's got a much larger job. Joining us now, Randeep Janda on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Randeep. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How's it going?
We're good. Thanks for taking the time to do this. Big day. It is the Canucks for Kids Telethon. A reminder to everybody listening, visit Canucks.com/telethon so you can contribute and support. I want to ask you, as having hosted one live event in my life as an MC and doing quite poorly, I can tell everyone listening, it is an incredibly difficult job. You've done it very well in the past, but I imagine that every time you must have a little bit of nerves and anxiety going in because it is a very difficult job. You do it quite well, though, Randeep. I got to say that.
Well, thank you very much. And it's my second time doing it. So I did it a couple of years ago with Elliot Friedman, who's, of course, in Vancouver the last few days. And it's just, you know, having that experience of doing and talking to people and work in a hockey game in a very different way. It's the best game of the year just because you're able to highlight so many of the things that, you know, the corporate beneficiaries that the Canucks for Kids Fund supports. So it is a challenge, no doubt. It's very fast moving. There's a lot of people kind of going in and out of the studio at Rogers Arena. So as a broadcaster, you're challenged. But it is, you know, when you know the impact of that broadcast, it just makes it so much easier. But I gotta say this as well, and this is not to pump up Elliot, because come on, Elliot Friedman,
right?
He is one of the easiest people to ever work with. Like, he is so automatic, so it just makes your job easier as somebody who's working alongside him. So really looking forward to it, guys.
I don't think people truly appreciate how difficult it is on television, because I don't know if everyone is aware of this or not, but you got this tiny little earpiece in where someone is talking to you constantly while you're trying to talk. Yeah, it's very difficult. Like, Greg just said hi, Mike, while I was talking. Threw me completely off kilter. I couldn't imagine someone be like, we got 30, we're going to break. Like, I've watched Shorty do it before. He's got this endless stream of communication and information. And it's not like unnecessary information. It's like, you need to stop talking because we have to go to commercial right now.
And
it's
the crazy thing is he's texting you at the same time.
And he's doing like 18 different things. He's eating pizza. Like, it's amazing. But like, just to state what you're saying about Friedge, like, to make it look as cool and calm as collected as he does, it really is impressive.
Yeah, when I started in television, that was the biggest throw off for me, because it was, I'm supposed to be talking, but I got this other person yelling in my ear as I'm talking. How am I processing all of that? That's actually one of the biggest transitions you make as a broadcaster. So yeah, I have a real appreciation for that now, to really compartmentalize when you're talking on air. And that goes for radio too, right? We deal with that as well when your producer's saying, all right, go to break. And you're just like, yeah, I got to finish this thought first. I got to talk about, you know, the fourth line minutes, because it's really important.
We just ignore those guys. Yeah. It's like, whatever, it's radio. Nobody cares.
But the best part about, or the worst part about television is that you don't get that option. Someone's like, 30, 15, 10, and then you're racing against the voice in your head doing the
ball. And I just think the Canucks are really good.
Yeah, doing the countdown to 3. You're like, oh, my God, I got to go. Anyway, the vibes in the building should be good tonight, not just because of the telethon and everything, but that last game against Vegas, we talked a lot about it. Connor Garland's name being sung from the rafters. What did you think when you heard that? Could you believe that we've come this far as a group that Connor Garland's name is being chanted at Rogers Arena?
Yeah, seeing that and just seeing the look on his face where you could tell, you know, he's taken back a little bit in a great way. This is a guy that started off the season, you know, being in that room and the trade conversation was going, you could tell it was uneasy. And now, what, into 4 games left in the year, you got him at 42 points, which, remember how slow his start was. Remember how much of a lull there was between just finding a role for him before he started playing with Dakota Joshua and Teddy Bluger. And now to have that sort of treatment where he's been, you know, lauded in the city, as he should, guys, in the last 12 games over the last month, he's been a point-per-game player. He leads the Canucks in shots on goal. His shooting percentage is, you know, above his career average. This is a guy that's feeling it right now. And what I really like about his game is, and we've talked about this before, but he's slippery. It's tough to get a hold of him, but he also gets inside. And when Bruce Cassidy, who is a pretty tough coach, says, hey, Garland gets there and he's, you know, in the middle of the ice, he was tough to handle. That is quite the compliment coming from a hard-nosed coach that loves that style of play. So for me, Connor Garland, just a great story, very similar to Dakota Joshua in that regard, where didn't start off the right way at the beginning of the year, but speaks to the character of the individual to say, hey, I just got to put that stuff to the side and get my job done. And I think also, you know, we got to focus on a little bit on the coach here. Rick Tocchet has mentioned numerous times that he talked to Connor Garland and said, there's certain things I need from you. Don't worry about the noise and just focus on those things. And Garland's done exactly that. And that's playing a certain style that was so successful for him in Arizona when he entered the league that it feels like he's gone back in time and he's become that player again.
Randy, we talked with Batch about this yesterday. So I want to ask you this as well. Do you think the Canucks top six as currently constructed, and that would be Pettersson with Besser and Hoglander and Miller with Garland and Joshua, do you think that top six is possibly or maybe even probably how they're going to head into the playoffs?
I think as of right now, yeah, I would look at that, because here's the problem when you don't have Dakota Joshua, JT Miller, and Connor Garland on a line. And I think Nils Hoglander with Pettersson is kind of just trying to find that fit where you can just be have more of the territorial dominance, right? And that's where JT Miller, Dakota Joshua, and Garland, they provide that for you, where you're able to keep the puck in the attacking zone, you're able to lean on teams and just wearing down teams. And ideally you want that through four lines. You want kind of what Vegas used to do, and they still do to a certain extent, where every single time a line is out there, they kind of weaken you and they set you up for the top six by having a heavy bottom six. The Canucks aren't necessarily there yet. They don't have that consistency. So you have to load up. So I think, yeah, this top six is probably the way you go in. Ideally, I'd love to see JT Miller back with Brock Besser, but if Brock is producing and he's able to get the power play going 5-on-5, you know, of course you want a little bit more from that Pettersson line. But the way that Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland work alongside JT Miller in terms of the territorial game, guys, I could see this, because that line to me, the one with Joshua, Miller, and Garland, that could be a problem for the opposition, whoever they play, based on the fact that they are a heavy lineup. Despite having Connor Garland on that line, he plays a style of game that is just, you know, it's tough to get the puck off him. He gets on the inside. So when I look at that line specifically, I think you're probably going to see that, and it's got a higher ceiling with one than Teddy Bluger. In an ideal world, sure, you have another couple of wingers where you can put Besser maybe with Miller, and then elevate somebody else to play alongside Pettersson on that right-hand side. But given what they have right now, without Elias Lindholm in the lineup, I think is what you got to go with. But, you know, that's the big point here is, when does Lindholm come back, and does he play down the middle or does he play on the wing?
Yeah, because this was going to be my follow-up question. If this is how the top six is going to look for game one of the playoffs, where does that leave the bottom six?
Yeah, it essentially leaves you in a spot where you trust your third line, which would be Teddy Bluger, McKayev, and Suter, to take some tough matchups, but that's kind of the neutralizer line, right? You're essentially They're your defensive specialist. The fourth line is, even though coaches love to roll four lines, we know in a matchup role, it's going to be difficult to have a fourth line playing anywhere above 8 to 9 minutes a game in the playoffs. So, you know, the bottom six, of course, that's something that you take a hit when you do load up your top six. But, you know, I could see that Bluger line being, all right, we're going to be using defensive matchups. We trust you. We understand the offense may be limited, even though, you know, Suter and Mikheyev have put up some points in their career this year, not maybe as consistent, but and that's unfortunately, you know, one of the realities of maybe lacking that balance until a healthy Elias Lindholm is back in the lineup, whenever that may be, or if that does happen, because if you have a Lindholm in the lineup, then you have a third line center that can give you some pop when healthy. But outside, without that, Jason, the identity of your third line specifically becomes a stopper line or a neutralizer line, where you're saying, hey, neutral matchups, we're okay with that. And the top six have to do the eating.
Do we still have you, Randy?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. Thatcher Demko, when do you think we'll see him make his reappearance for the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question here. And I would say, you know, based on what's happening this week, of course, you've got the game against Arizona tonight. Edmonton seems like, I wouldn't be surprised, obviously, given, you know, if your star goalie is ready to go, you put him in. But to me, it comes down to the final two games of the year. They're not probably going to be ideal matchups because you're probably resting some players, especially if you lock up the division officially, especially if you take care of business against Edmonton on the weekend. But you need to get those 2 to 3 games in. So I'm looking at Calgary. I'm looking at Winnipeg. You might have some players that are playing in that lineup that are not everyday starters, or they're not part of your six defensemen or your 12 forwards. But I look back at that, you know, those final two games. Now, the question is that enough? Is that enough to get him going? Is he in a spot that you're comfortable to say he's got enough reps before the playoff starts? And that's the reality of any injury. You can't force it. You can't rush it. Rick Tocchet has mentioned that with Thatcher Demko, but he previously mentioned that with Dakota Joshua, where they're not going to rush back players. These guys have to be ready to go. So ideally, you know, you want him sooner rather than later. The fact that he's practicing now and was there for most of practice is a positive step. But guys, I look at those final two games and say, all right, if you can get him against Calgary in that final home game, if you can even get him on that Thursday against Winnipeg, where, all right, there's a bit of a habit there. He's back in the crease. He's building his day-to-day habits. And then in the first round, depending on when they start, which I would suspect is probably a Sunday game, April 21st or thereabouts, that he's ready to go. So I'm looking at those final two games.
We're speaking to Canucks radio analyst Randy Janda here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Okay, you get to be Rick Tocchet or Ian Clark or whomever in this scenario. Who do you start tonight? Arthur Seelovs or Casey DeSmith?
All right. So a couple of games ago, when people were talking about Seelovs should be the backup, and I was like, okay, get out of here. Like, in the playoffs, Casey DeSmith right. is your backup. Right. He's a guy he's not necessarily maybe playing his best, but he's still got the resume. He's a player that you're going to rely on if you need him. Seelovs, and, you know, after the first two goals against Vegas, I was kind of leaning towards the DeSmith element, but hey, Seelovs responded. He played an excellent game after that. So tonight, against Arizona, I would actually probably go Seelovs, just based on the fact that I really like the way, you know, his second half of the game was. He responded, and credit to Vancouver as a team, because they really limited what they gave Vegas 5-on-5. And, you know, the kid's feeling it. Long-term, DeSmith is still the guy for me. I think if there's any issues in the playoffs, you go with the player that has the experience, that the guy that's been there before. But as of right now, if you got a goaltender feeling it, and you got another one right now that maybe could use some time off or some one-on-one work with Ian Clark a little bit more just to refine as the season goes on, I'd like Seelovs here, and then maybe on the weekend you look at what the Thatcher Demko situation is, and you give DeSmith the boost of confidence in that game against a heavy-hitting Oilers team. But right now, I like this matchup for Seelovs. Go against Arizona and continue on some of that confidence he got late in that game against Vegas.
It is the 34th annual Canucks for Kids Found Telethon presented by TD. Randeep, best of luck tonight. I know you're going to kill it. You'll do great. Thank you again for doing this. As always, we'll talk again next week.
Awesome, guys, and thank you. And you can donate now. So I know the telethon's going on tonight, but you can hit up that link, canucks.com/telethon, and and get started before you go to work or while you're at work too, because we know how productive we can be at work at some time.
Very good show. Thanks, Randy.
Get in there and start doing it.
Yeah, thanks, bud. Appreciate it. Yeah, that's Randy Janda here. The Canucks for Kids Fund. I went between fund and foundation there.
Yeah, I know.
And then I went found.
That was good.
Canucks.com/telethon. Start contributing and supporting now.
So if you're going to the game tonight, section 111, we'll see the spouses and partners of Canucks players selling 50-50 tickets. So you can go and talk to them and you can go like, what's the most annoying thing about being married to so-and-so? That can be a conversation starter.
Or don't do that. Do the exact opposite of that.
Stan Smeal will also appear at section 120 from 6:30 to 7. He's going to be selling hot dogs at Steamers. And I hope he gets really into it.
Just like hocking them at people?
Hot dogs, yeah.
Stan, how many times have we told you, throw them at the fans?
Yeah. So
give me the t-shirt cannon.
Hopefully it's going to be a fun night, but more importantly, hopefully it's going to be a profitable night for the Canucks for Kids Fund, as Alfred puts it.
Found. And a reminder, Puck Drop is 7:30 tonight. That'll allow all the pregame festivities and the telethon to get rolling before they do Puck Drop. Okay, what we learned here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650, friendly reminder, we're running two contests at the same time. It's a lot for our show, but we're doing it. We're doing it. We're giving away a $100 gift card to Primetime Bridge Brewing. That's going to go to one of the best What We Learns. Hashtag it WWL. Dunbar number text line is 650-650. You need to put a beer emoji into the text to be entered into the contest. That's important. We're also giving away tickets to see the Canucks and the Flames next Tuesday, April 16th from Rogers Arena. The penultimate game of the season. The final home game of the year. If you want to go, send in What We Learned. Make it good. Dunbar Lumber text sign is 650-650. Hashtag it WWL. Put a ticket emoji into the text.
Okay, I'm going to kick off the What We Learns. I learned yesterday that it is indeed Masters Week.
Can confirm.
This week. So tomorrow, during our show, the Masters will be on. And here are a couple feature groups at the Masters, which again, is this week.
Can confirm.
It starts tomorrow. Scottie Scheffler, the favorite, is in, they call them pairing, but there's three people in it, with Rory McIlroy, who has not won a major since 2014 and has never won the Masters. And Xander Schauffele is also part of that group. So that's three guys, pretty good golfers. All of those guys could win the Masters. And I know a lot of people have sent in this What We Learned, that Scottie Scheffler has a decision to make because his wife might go into labor this weekend.
So on that note.
But I don't even think it's a decision. If she goes into labor, he's leaving.
That's what he said.
So what?
They discussed this at length on the CBS Sports Talk radio show that precedes the show in the morning. I was listening to it on the way in. And I mean at length.
Yeah.
Like at least 25 minutes. Where I was like, it feels like a long time. They were trying to come at it from every different angle. But you're kind of bringing up an important point. It's like Scheffler's already made up his mind.
Yeah.
If she goes into labor, he's gone.
Although he might have like follow-up questions like, how much into labor are you?
And how far in
can
the
you
lead?
Hold on?
How far in the lead am I at the Masters?
That's I wonder what would happen. I guess you'd lose your bet. If you bet on Scheffler.
The important part.
Well,
the wagers.
Have you noticed that gambling is more and more a part of the conversation around sports now?
Oh, is that?
Have you noticed that?
Is that what we've been doing?
That?
Is that what those commercials are for?
What if, mention it.
What if he's got like a 5-shot lead and his wife is too weak to hold off the labor, and then just
walking a line with that one. Just lost all our female listeners there.
What? You can't hold on? You can't just clench? No,
like you guys. What you guys have gained in gamblers and lost in female listeners.
You can't. Oh, sorry. I'm just a man.
Any of our listeners, please text in and let us know what you.
You can't
think.
Just. Oh, okay.
This was the conversation they were having. This
I thought
morning.
That was like core strength. If you have more core strength, you can. No, okay. So Scottie Scheffler, let's say he's got like a 5-shot lead on Sunday, and his wife is like, "You better get here, because if you want to be here for the birth of your first child." Get on a private jet right now. So he leaves.
He's already said he's leaving.
Yeah, so I guess you'd lose your bet. Anyway, Tiger Woods.
That's the important thing.
Once again, the important part.
I hope everyone knows I'm joking.
Again, the important part.
Tiger Woods is in a group with Jason Day and Max Homa.
The homie.
I think Rahm is right before the Scheffler group with McIlroy and Schauffele. I can't remember who he's playing with. And then there's four Canadians in the field of the Masters. Corey Connors, Adam Hadwin, Nick Taylor, and the only Canadian who's ever won the Masters, Mike Weir, who will probably not win, but I have
not with that attitude.
Hopes for Nick Taylor, certainly, and Corey Connors, and also Adam Hadwin, but probably in that order, Nick Taylor, Corey Connors, and Adam Hadwin. Nick has obviously won some big events, including the Canadian Open. The Masters is always different because, you know, for some guys, it really suits their eye. And it suits their strengths. You know, one of the things about Rory McIlroy is, for whatever reason, Augusta just has not suited him. Whereas a guy like Tiger Woods, even though a lot of golf courses suited Tiger Woods when he was in his prime, it was especially Augusta. He just knows how to get around that course. And if Tiger can stay healthy, like, you can never count out Tiger Woods. The big question is whether or not he can stay healthy enough to not only play well for four rounds, but not get fatigued for four rounds, because walking Augusta is no easy task.
Two things. One, Rahm is in a pairing, which again is three guys. I don't know why they couldn't come up with another name, but I digress. He's in with Matt Fitzpatrick and Nick Dunlap, so that's kind of an interesting group. They also tee off right before the big trio of Scheffler, McIlroy, and Schauffele, so that's going to be a lot of cameras on that. That's at 7:30 our time, and then the other one is 7:42. And I noticed the Tiger Woods coverage, which actually, this might sound like I'm a novice and I don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm surprised that we're still here. Like, I know it's the Masters and I know it's Augusta and I know it's Tiger, but I almost feel like it speaks more to the current climate of golf that they keep coming back to this. Like, there's a lot of people yearning for the Tiger Woods era because it was so profound for golf.
Well, it was just a couple of years ago that he did win the Masters, though.
Right, but a lot of things have happened since then, yeah, including, like, a lot of physical ailments, which have basically prevented him from playing golf. And he's old.
Well, finishing rounds.
Yeah. And I know sometimes he can dial the Wayback Machine, and everyone loves. And at this point, he would be an underdog in a comeback story. But I also think it has to speak to the current climate that this is one of the stories. And again, don't get me wrong, I know every time that he is at Augusta and dons red, it's going to be this way. I get it.
I just think there's a history of golfers winning at an advanced age.
Sure.
You know, Jack Nicklaus doing it at 46, Phil Mickelson winning a major in his 50s, and then Tiger Woods only a few years ago proving all the doubters wrong and winning yet another major. So that's an element of golf that's always going to be there. But I know what you're saying. I get what you're saying, and I have time for it.
Yeah,
there are issues in the golf world right now. And I think a lot of people are excited for this Masters that we are going to see the top players all in the same field together, because we haven't seen that enough lately in the world of golf. But I think there are some other compelling storylines in this. For me, Rory at the Masters is always interesting. He's missed the cut in two of his last three Masters, and yet the one time he didn't miss the cut in those last three, he finished second, right? And for Rory, who came out with almost as much as hype as Tiger Woods to start his career, to not go with a major win for a decade is really a huge story. And he needs to win the Masters to really fully realize his career potential. He's only won four majors, which sounds like, you know, he's only won four majors, but he won those four majors all within 4 years when he was younger. So people are like, oh, he's going to win a lot more. Mm-hmm. And he just hasn't. And he's never won the Masters. And the golfers, the greats, all want to win each one.
Okay, first things first, Moo Cow, because Jason has done is what we learned.
I've also been canceled, so I will not be here for the next segment.
You know, he made it to 48 before he got canceled, so there's something to be said for that. Coming up on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650, we're going to do our contest winners. We're going to announce both. Also, A-Dog has a huge concert series announcement. Not concert, concerts. You're listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on the People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now for my favorite part of the show. What did I say? Talk to the audience. Oh, God, this is always dead.
It's what we learn time. It's what we learn time. It's what we learn time. On the show.
On a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. It is what we learn time. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. This next 27 minutes, actually more like 24 minutes, is going to be a true test of our broadcasting skill because we have so many things that we have to do, and we've tried to choreograph it as best as possible. And if you know anything about the Halford and Bruff Show, this is going to be a disaster. First, we're going to go to Laddie with what we learned from our side of the table. The important thing is that Laddie learned something. It's probably about baseball and or goaltending. Go.
You were right, the first one.
Yep.
Baseball.
I knew it.
I had what we learned a little while ago about the Fanatics jerseys, right? And there's a lot of heat surrounding them in baseball. The names are all messed up. They're still all messed up. The pants, they're still see-through. We had a guy sliding into home burst the seam of his pant to reveal his entire whatever he was wearing underneath.
His undergarments.
It's continuing. So now, the last week, we've seen five different teams not receive their City Connect jerseys. The latest
ones are the
San Francisco Giants were supposed to wear them yesterday, mm-hmm. and they're in a bit of a slump, and they're like, okay, we like our City Connect jerseys. We usually win with them on. Let's go. They didn't appear with them on because they don't have them. Apparently, there's been some sort of shipping issue, and they're not the only team. The Texas Rangers, they weren't able to wear them on their first scheduled time to wear their City
In my day,
jerseys.
You had home jerseys and away jerseys.
The Brewers don't have their jerseys. The Cardinals don't have their jerseys. And the Mariners don't have their cream jerseys. So it's becoming an epidemic in MLB that not only do the jerseys look terrible, but a lot of the teams don't even have their full sets yet. And we're a week into the season.
I'm sorry, I just heard it loud. The Mariners don't have their cream jerseys.
I don't like that word.
It's their Sunday
Where
jersey,
are
isn't
our
it?
Cream jerseys?
Is that the Sunday jersey, the throwback?
The Sunday creams?
Yeah, Sunday cream. Okay.
Throw up.
Okay.
It's like Wimbledon. Strawberries and cream for the Mariners.
That's right.
Hello. You are a child.
All right, just mook out that whole thing.
Come on, Fanatics, get on it.
The carefully choreographed segment is off to a rousing start.
Thanks to you.
No, that's fine. Alfred. Hey, I want to wear my Sunday
cream.
It
was going so smooth.
You know what? I'm going to start up a line of clothing called Sunday Creams. It's going to be super non-subtle.
Good band name, too, the Sunday Creams.
Yeah, it's very versatile. Okay, A-Dog.
And Fanatics is going to do all the work on it.
All your merch.
A-Dog, I put this on you because you're our in-house musician, resident music guy, and everyone loves a good PNE summer concert series. They dropped the news today for the summer lineup. Can you tell us who's coming to the PNE Amphitheater this summer?
Yes, it starts August 17th. Burton Cummings, he'll be in his cream jersey with Colin James.
Burton Creams.
August 18th has Amanda Marshall with Serena Ryder. August 20th, Bachman Turner Overdrive. They'll just be playing one song and repeat.
Donnie Moj and Rick will be there.
Play it again! August 21st.
The working overtime part. August 21st is Blondie. August 22nd, John Fogerty.
John Fogerty, you absolute.
Oh, come on.
Oh, my God.
August. You know what? Just push through. All you can do here is push through.
I'm doing this to annoy Bruff now. August 23rd is Brad Paisley.
John Fogerty.
August 25th.
Look a little Fogerty out there.
Charlotte Cardin. August 27th is the Commodores with the Pointer Sisters.
That's a huge one.
August 28th, Flo Rida.
Yep.
August 29th, Blue Rodeo. August 30th is Ludacris. There you go, Halford.
Yes.
August 31st, Punjabi Versa Night. September 1st, Bare Naked Ladies, or Bare Naked Lotties. And September 2nd is the I Love the 90s Tour.
So I mentioned this.
And John Fogerty will be appearing at every concert with a bit of an encore.
John Fogerty. I want you, and then when you say Foghat, I want you to call them Foghat. Okay, the reason I brought this up is like Ludacris coming is awesome because I love Ludacris, but it's hilarious. I don't know if you've ever seen the Justin Bieber roast when Pete Davidson murders Ludacris because he's going around the stage.
Mm-hmm. Introducing people that are there.
He looks at Ludacris. He's like, you might know Ludacris from your mom's, now that's what I call music CD. And then Ludacris just sat there and he's like, I have been defeated. That's the perfect joke for the PNE Summer Concert Series because I guarantee you right now there's going to be a bunch of moms in attendance with their, now that's what I call music CDs. Anyway, mook out that. Now, fire up the Dab Matrix. Humanoid submission.
Fogerty.
Shout out to my boy, John Fogerty.
He's an icon.
Who was it who did Cetera? Was it Halford?
That was me.
Peter Cetera and John Fogerty.
I read it late at Cetera, which I still stand by.
I did Bruce Cockburn.
Bruce Cockburn's a good one.
Yep.
Yeah. Not for him.
Come on.
Hey, I forgot it was Masters Week, so we all make mistakes.
Yeah, like talk about coming down on someone the day after a huge gaffe. What we learned, Humanoid Edition, brought to you by Get Fire Plan. Protect what matters most with comprehensive fire safety plans, monthly audits, and risk mitigation at $200 off. Visit them at getfireplan.com.
Oh, my God! We're having a fire!
Plan.
Okay, we got winners. Let's do the tickets first. Do you have it at the ready here? This is the tickets, two tickets to see the Canucks and the Flames next Tuesday. It's the last home game of the year. It is also Andre Kuzmenko's homecoming game. Go.
You know, a lot of people texted in their What We Learns, and they wanted Canucks tickets, and they were for selfish reasons. MKL texts in this What We Learned. It's not particularly funny. It's not really about sports, but it is thoughtful.
Altruistic.
MKL. Just a reminder, what we learned. The Canucks for Kids telethon will be televised throughout tonight's game. A great initiative started by the Canucks. Hopefully many of us have the opportunity to support those in need.
You know what?
You know, simple and just heartfelt. Earnest.
Very rarely do we reward like altruism and acts of selflessness on the program, largely because we're complete jerks. But yeah. In these rare moments, it's not good just to amplify those texts, but to reward them with tickets.
No, I hope I don't see MKL outside the arena like, tickets here, I got two tickets.
I'm selling them for as much as I can get.
I'm going to the bar.
Yeah. Okay.
Those suckers fell for it.
So congrats to MKL. Andy's reached out and get your contact information. The winner of the $100 gift card to Primetime Bridge Brewing is Kelsey in Langley. Congrats, Kelsey. Kelsey writes, hashtag WWO, what we learned. The Sedins and Bieksa wanted the Vancouver Canucks to keep John Tortorella after the 2013-2014 season. Too bad Torts plays the same old tune in every town he gets a job in. So this comes from the Nasty Knuckles podcast. I can't keep track of who's hosting these anymore. There's so many ex-NHLers, largely fighters, that have podcasts now, just throw it on the pile. But Bieksa went on there. And Kevin Bieksa has done a smart thing. He's cornered the market on stories that people haven't heard yet about his time in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just slowly lets them out there for new content.
Right.
He understands it as a
content
creator.
We all knew the Sedins respected Tortorella.
But the one on the weekend was that he was the first one to admit from the 2011 team that they wanted Tampa Bay instead of Boston, right? So Bieksa gets the game. He's a content creator now. So this new one is that Bieksa and the Sedins, after that season, went to bat, not just that they liked Torts as a coach, but that they wanted to have them back for another kick at the can. Now, you bring up a good point. The Sedins have been very outspoken in years past that they really liked Tortorella as a coach and thought that he did a good job and everything. And here's the thing with Torts.
Maybe they just loved his fitness test.
Could be.
Because they could really shine.
Or, yeah, they're just like, he can yell. It rolls right off our back. It's fine. It doesn't matter. I doubt he took the Sedins to task very often anyway. Point being, Torts is just such a confounding individual and personality because when you hear players talk about him, there are players that you would least expect to love him that love him. And then there's players that you'd think would work with him and they absolutely hate him. And he just can't get out of his own way.
I think the Sedins were so much more intense than we think they are. You know, because they came across as quite soft-spoken, but they were just intense competitors that people
don't... I just meant like a personality thing. Like,
yeah.
Because Torts is... He can't get out of his own way. Like, what he's done in Philadelphia this year was him just... He's like, I need to do some Torts things, I think, at the end of the day.
He almost feels just the need to just be, you know, the center of... gravity.
Well, it's what he always says is like, I don't think he can be comfortable unless he's uncomfortable. I think he likes having players being uncomfortable. And sometimes it works, but a lot of times it doesn't. Anyway, congrats to Kelsey and Langley and to MKL for winning. We're doing a good job here, guys. I feel some real chemistry in the room. It's like Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland in here.
Jovan from Richmond, what we learned, pitchers in Major League Baseball are dropping like flies. It's proven people are getting stronger and more athletic at a younger age with the sports science we have these days, but it might be costing these pitchers their careers trying to throw so hard. So here's the deal. A lot of it is elbow injuries. Now, I want all of you sitting at your laptops to Google image search pitchers, elbows, Major League Baseball, and go and see some of the angles that these arms get to before they release, essentially.
So this story is...
Like, inverted W you're talking about?
Yeah, I don't know what they're called, but it just like, I know my arm can't do that.
This story began...
And if it did, it would snap.
I think with Jeff Passan from ESPN, who's now made it sort of almost like a crusade. I don't want to throw that term around lightly, but he threw out there, he's like, we need to have a serious conversation about arm health, not just at the major league level, but guys that are coming up and in their early 20s that have had like two Tommy John surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing
and
is...
And they almost want them. They almost want them.
Well, the scary thing is now they're realizing that a lot of these pitchers are coming up that they're heavily, you know, innings limiting them, and they're not letting them pitch, which is right, but they're coming up to the big leagues and then still needing Tommy John surgery. Like, it doesn't matter. So the new way of handling it is just get innings in with these pitchers while you can.
Here's my take.
It's going to happen.
Yes. Here's my take. Yes. They're the running backs of baseball.
Could be.
The NFL, a lot of the theory is just like, listen, these guys are going to be done. Mm-hmm. But they got a few years in them, you know, basically run them hard, let the league chew them up, and then there's always going to be more running backs.
Well, the goalies in their hips,
yeah.
Right?
But
it's almost an inevitability now that if you're a goaltender professionally, you're going to need some type of hip surgery at some point in your life, whether it's during your playing career or after.
So the issue here is two things. It's velocity and spin rate. Is that, you know, when they started really dialing down the metrics on pitches, they found that the harder you throw and the greater spin rate you have, the more effective pitcher and the more effective pitches you're going to throw. The problem is what Jason was talking about, is that you have to do ungodly things to your arm angles and to your elbow to achieve the velocity and spin rate. Now, the issue is with the churn that you're talking about is that you need more arms to churn through, which means you need to start identifying players at a younger age to become pitchers as opposed to playing one of the other stupid positions like, God forbid, left field. Anyway, point being... You get guys now, and it's happening at a younger and younger, where, I mean, I coached Little League for a while, and there's kids that know how to throw and are effectively being taught to throw sliders.
Offered where you're like, no, you need to get your elbow in a much more painful position.
Yeah, I'm like...
You got to bring the heat, kid.
Yeah, and I'm like, and we're throwing you as many pitches as we can today, right?
And we need you.
But the torque on these arms...
Throw as many cutters as you can. Torque.
I don't think people understand. Torque. Like, there's a great story when I was covering the Jays for a little bit. I was in the dugout, and Pat Henkin was there, and he was telling some stories. He's a talker, so he was going off on some story about how you always knew you pitched a great game when you got in the car after the game, and you had to start your ignition with your right hand. because you couldn't lift your left arm to get to the sorry, you had to use his left arm to reach across. You
I think most people listening to this show have probably thrown their arms out at some point, just even playing,
but,
you know,
but to do that
softball or
whatever, once every 5 days.
It is it is crazy. You know, it reminds me of like there's certain areas, whether it's Tiger Woods' knee when he was putting a ton of torque on it, or his back when he was putting a ton of torque on it. Like it takes a toll, but I think when it comes to pro sports and team sports especially, if they don't put that torque on their elbows, they're not going to make it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're not going to throw hard enough, and the same could be true of running backs. If they don't run as hard as they can and put themselves in positions where they're going to get hurt, then they're not going to make it.
Goalies in the butterfly. Why don't you just stand up?
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to make it.
Yeah. And, well, that's the thing is that there's someone else that'll be like, torque my elbow away. Like, I want to be a Major League Baseball pitcher. Now, the interesting...
Well, it's kind of like Matt Rempe. If I'm not going to make it unless I fight.
Now,
do these sorts of things. You know, it's a little different when you're talking about your head, but it's the same sort of theory.
But this is such an interesting litmus test because for years and years and years, the value of a star starting pitcher that could chew up innings and win the Cy Young and win MVPs was a part of baseball. It was sewn into the fabric. Now you're looking at it, you're like, I want to get as many arms as I can so that my guy doesn't pitch a lot, but I'm running out.
New pitcher every inning.
New pitcher every inning.
Okay.
Really?
I really do want to get to some of these What We Learns because the listeners sent them in. Chayton and Surrey, What We Learn, death taxes and Harry Kane converting a penalty against Arsenal. An unbelievable day of Champions League football yesterday, filled with Galazzo's lead changes and three controversial reffing decisions in the Arsenal match. Yeah, I thought
match was a gone.
I thought Saka might get that call right at the end. I was a little surprised. And I don't know if Arsenal has much of a chance going back to Bayern, but Bayern will be without Alphonso Davies, who picked up a yellow early on in the Arsenal match. So that was the game that I watched. But I guess Man City and Real was equally pretty interesting. A 3-3 draw.
Yeah, and that had a golazo that you were talking about from Phil Foden, who's remarkably in form. Go England, Euro.
England have got to make a deep run at the Euros.
They're the betting favorite, which means they're probably going to crash out in the round of
16. What We Learn from Greg the Professional Mouse Toucher. I never like saying that. What We Learned. Rick Tockett and the coaching staff must have highlighted the return of Thomas Hurdle the other night against Vegas. The Canucks were noticeably physical on Hurdle.
I noticed that as well.
Giving him shots. So did Hurdle. Giving him shots after the whistle in the scrums and laying the body early and often, capped off by the big clean hit by Ian Cole. Yeah, and Greg didn't mention the big dirty hit by Filip Hronek.
The big interference.
Well, yeah, I mean, dirty is kind of a strong word. But
cheap.
It was interference. It was a penalty. And Ian Cole, by the way, gave up like a 2-on-1 to make that hit. It was maybe a questionable pinch, but at least you took a man out.
But here's the thing. I really liked it. I have nothing against
it. Totally. The Canucks are a physical team. The Canucks are, you can no longer say the Canucks are easy to play against.
I have nothing against Tomáš Hertl. I like him as a person. I think he's got a good personality. And he's a good hockey player. I want him to fail so incredibly badly. I can't even describe to you how the levels of which I would like him to fail miserably.
Well, speaking of that theory and us being bad people based on our takes, Basketball Phil, What We Learned, since he got recalled, 4 goals with 3 game winners, Shane Wright has appeared to have arrived in Seattle. Yeah, Shane Wright scored again last night for the Kraken in their 5-0 win over the Arizona Coyotes. I guess I'm on the record as saying I don't think he'll be much of a player for the Kraken. So
you have an inordinate amount of stock in him failing.
Because my ego is now involved because it's an opinion. I'm not happy to see this.
Well, you know,
I mean, I say this like tongue-in-cheek. Like, I don't want Shane Wright to fail.
It's not tongue-in-cheek.
But I also want my opinions to be mostly correct.
So you know how you spin this.
Mm-hmm.
They're meaningless goals. Meaningless goals games, right?
Yeah,
why don't you do it when it counts?
Hey, he's the Kuzmenko of the Seattle Kraken. Congratulations, because Kuzmenko is also piling up all sorts of points for the Flames in meaningless games.
Someone's trying to yell at me that Kuzmenko has already been back to Vancouver. Look, every time Kuzmenko comes back, it's a homecoming, pal. Okay? Mm-hmm. And I used pal in a very derogatory way.
Said pal.
Yeah.
Pal.
Unsigned What We Learned. Anyone who hasn't seen the Nathan MacKinnon's highlights from last night should make them a must-see. Hat trick on every goal. he put on the skating burners and left everyone on the ice behind.
Yeah.
Don't think I've ever seen anything like that series of goals. I don't know if I have either. The acceleration
around,
that he gets and the edge work and the power that he plays with is truly incredible. And we as hockey fans are seeing just incredible stuff from the athletes on the ice. From Quinn Hughes' skating that we're almost used to, to Connor McDavid skating, Nathan MacKinnon skating.
I know this was a few days back now, but do you remember the video going around of McDavid chasing down MacKinnon for the loose puck?
Vaguely.
And then takes it back from him, and the entire time MacKinnon's looking back, and I'm like, dear Lord, this guy is as fast as me. Like, he's keeping pace with me.
Nobody's ever caught me before.
Yeah, like, he's keeping pace with me the entire time. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, no, it is truly remarkable. And there are a lot of people that say the NHL has never been better, and there are some people that says, yeah, the athletes have never been better, but the games aren't as intense as they were. The rivalries aren't
faster.
There.
Let's just put it that way. The game's never been faster.
The players have never been as skilled as they are now, which makes sense because, you know, everything progresses. But what the players are doing on the ice and just watching MacKinnon skate and watching McDavid skate and watching Quinn Hughes skate is truly incredible. It makes me want science to come up with something like a virtual reality where we can experience just like what it feels like to do that.
We could come up with a lot of good ideas.
Yeah,
today,
so there's
right?
a VR for goalies. There's a VR that goalies use where you can face the shots from.
No, but
I want
to know.
You want the holodeck in Star Trek?
You want to be the one carrying the puck?
Yeah,
right.
I
want
to know what it feels
you want the
like
holodeck.
For your body to be able to do that.
Yeah, in Star Trek, there's the holodeck.
Well, when we start up our business,
that's what you want.
Sunday creams. I'm sure VR can be like one of the things that we do, right?
Yeah.
Had to get one more Sunday creams
Sunday
in there.
Sunday creams.
Right?
I'm wearing my Sunday creams. You got the goggles on and everything.
Such a relaxing Sunday after that cream.
All right, we got to get out of here, possibly forever. Signing off, I have been Mike Halford. He's been Jason Bruff. He's been A-Dog, and he's been Laddie. This has been the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
Oh, my God, I forgot the game.